Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail. Companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Nick Wassenberg, CEO of Cludo.
If I were going to start from the beginning, I wouldn't say, okay, well, let's have 27 different industry categories. We would pick one and build a product that was amazing for them and then pick another and then broaden out from there. I think that's an easy mistake. Your eyes get pretty big, especially in a solution set like ours, where it is.
Yeah.
There's some amount of it that's universal and universally applicable. You still have to niche down and find your way that way.
This is Nick. He's a marketing veteran turned CEO with an entrepreneurial mindset shaped by working closely with founders. Precisely as employee number 12 at Fulcrum, he experienced rapid growth dynamics firsthand. His diverse background spans manufacturing, healthcare, financial services, and global consulting. He's driven by an insatiable curiosity to understand how different businesses work. In June 2023, he became the CEO of Cludo, and their mission? To get website visitors of critical organizations the most relevant, timely, and trusted answers. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Nick to my podcast. We explore his strategic decisions in his first 90 days. He shares how he is transforming Cludo's approach for serving everyone to deliberately focusing on specific customer segments where they can deliver the most value. Last but not least, he shares his insights on how understanding the hidden patterns in customer behavior shapes both product development and go-to-market strategy. And by listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, the importance of aligning your solution with your customer's top priorities, rather than trying to elevate the priority of your specific solution. Secondly, where he is investing his marketing budget to solve the current challenges of trying to make outbound work in complex B2B sales. Thirdly, the strategic advantage of focusing on input metrics that drive outcomes rather than just measuring outputs. And lastly, the importance of building strength in areas outside your comfort zone to drive business growth. Well, hi, Nick. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Yeah, great. Great to be with you.
It's a pleasure indeed. We talked a little while ago, and I sort of know you from the past when I was doing the podcast with Fulcrum. So interesting. What I wanted to kind of zoom in on is like the journey you've been on since June 2023, where you became the CEO of a company called Cludo. But before we start talking about the company and like what the company is all about, what drives you? What gives you energy?
I think I find myself pulled to areas where I can be super curious and explore with that curiosity. I see this kind of reflected a bit in my career path. I've had time spent in manufacturing at Fulcrum, as you mentioned, always in marketing, which I think is just a naturally kind of curiosity aligned part of business. But I've worked in healthcare and health insurance. I've worked in the manufacturing kind of software space. I've worked in financial services. I've worked in consulting, global consulting company, and now here at kind of a marketing technology company that serves customers around the world. It's just, I kind of go where my curiosity pulls me. So that's kind of how I've always been wired to kind of think through systems and how they work, as well as kind of the impact of technology. And that's where my curiosity has led me.
Cool. That's the way to do it, you know, curiosity, and then go where you can make the biggest possible impact for that point in time in your career. Good. So, yeah, making the switch then to going from Fulcrum, becoming the CEO of a company called Cluedo. Company existed already for a while. What was the big reason that you ended up taking the role of the CEO there?
Yeah, I feel like it is one of those patterns in life that's hard to predict sometimes. I'm a lifelong marketing person, so I've been in marketing my whole career, lots of different roles, lots of different size and shape of company, and always had kind of an entrepreneurial mindset and have been privileged to work for founders and CEOs and kind of business owners that had a vision for what they wanted to do. So I always inside me somewhere, I always had the aspiration to try and do that. And so sometimes you do that as an employee and you have that entrepreneurial mindset and you're drawn to, like at Fulcrum, I was like employee number 12. So we were very much in figure it out mode when I joined, and we grew really fast and it was really fun. So having that kind of like, oh, maybe I could take a blend of all of the things that these amazing founders and CEOs that I've worked for and put my own kind of like, make my own Frankenstein CEO mentality and add some of my learnings to it could be cool. And so that was part of what drew me to Cluedo. And obviously a lot of other aspects of the business, the category we're in is super exciting. The elements of AI, like all of those things were something that drew me in. I'd been lucky and fortunate enough to have worked for global companies before. So I had a team of folks in Europe and have spent some time kind of like exploring again in the curiosity way, like how people buy and sell things in Germany, which I don't live in Germany. So there's a learning curve there, of course, but there's also like a lot of fun in exploring new cultures that way.
Yeah, exactly. Nice, nice. So yeah, talking about Cluedo then, what is the big idea behind the business? Because it's AI kind of added to search to make people find the right type of content. What is the big
Right.
idea and what was the problem that the company is solving?
I think the big idea is getting people the answers that they need as easily and as intuitively as possible. So a great experience on websites. And how we do that is by taking all of the content that one of our customers' websites has and having a little search experience. I say little when it's actually a fairly challenging problem to solve, having a search experience on their property, on their website that directs visitors directly to the answer that's relevant and timely and just accurate and trusted, right? So, as an example, we work with colleges and universities. So, universities, by their definition, is one of the market segments we work with. But it's a good example because, by definition, universities are very like vibrant. They have a lot of new things going on all the time. They're producing new research. They're having events. They're having athletic events if it's the States. And new courses, new like professors joining, all of these new things. The content just keeps getting ramped up. And some of that creates like a website visitor that's a student or a parent or an alumni member. They just want to find what they want, but there's so much there. And so, search, as we've all learned for decades now, search is a good way to access information because you can just type in what you want and it shows up. And so, the challenge though is having a tool in place that can crawl websites, create an engine that provides super relevant responses based on what that search is going to be. It's a fairly challenging technical problem. We're almost creating like mini Googles on every website. And so
I was just saying, yeah.
it's part of the challenge, but extremely valuable. So we have example customers where 20, 30, 40% of their visitors actually go to search before they navigate. Which was a surprise for me, the just sheer amount of people that were using site search on any given site is very high. So it is the customer experience, it is the visitor experience for a lot of these sites. So that's the big idea, getting people the answers they want. That is
Yeah,
as simple as
yeah.
that.
So what is the opportunity if you get it right? You know, if the companies that start to work with your solution, what is the transformation they're going through and what is the difference, for example, for a university?
Yeah, it can show up in a few different ways. It can show up. I remember talking to somebody at a university, and they literally had the dean sent them an email in the middle of the night because they couldn't find something on the website. And they were like, why is our website broken? The search doesn't work. And this was pre-Clido, by the way. With Clido in place, we fixed that problem. So there's like those moment in time things where someone can't find an answer. And there's all sorts of knock-on effects when that happens. There may be a, if they can't find an answer on the website, they may assume it doesn't exist. And you lose that potential conversion, that potential engagement, potential brand affinity, whatever the case may be. They may also email or call in, and then you're tapping into human resources to solve and get the answer that they may have been able to self-serve. So there's a lag in the information, and there's a cost to having a call center and somebody replying to a question that they may have been able to find their answer on their own. And then we work with plenty of customers where there's actually a conversion or transaction element to it too. If I'm on a site and I'm looking for, maybe I'm on a manufacturer site and I need a replacement part for my appliance, I'm going to search for that part number. If that search doesn't show me exactly where I want to go, I may not buy it on that site. I may go somewhere else, or I may have to replace my dishwasher and I have a negative brand experience that way. So sometimes it's tracked all the way to the conversion rate. It really depends on the mission of the website. Like every website has its own mission in a way and its own set of things that kind of the visitors are trying to accomplish. Having their ability to find the answers that they need lets them accomplish that mission as quickly and as easily as possible.
That's indeed. Have you ever, what I mean, you were just talking about Google, and then the whole picture comes to me like a website with just a search bar. Have you got customers that are that bold to say everything is gone, it's just a bar?
We have a few that it's very prominent, and there's examples of brands. Up until not that long ago, there was actually a clothing brand that wasn't a customer of ours, but they took away all their navigation. It was just a search bar. I think it is one of those things where people know how to search. People actually know how to search quite well. And part of what's exciting about our space and our category is where we're taking it is where our customers want it to go. So you may be familiar with things like Perplexity and even Google having, it's not, the days of searching and getting a list of links are over. Like people are past that. They have other expectations of, I want to see related links. I want to see calls to action. I want to see summary paragraphs. I want to have a prompt-based conversation around my search results. So that's what gets me super excited is the ability to do that on these sites. And I think the other element of it that is very clear that is kind of already here, the advent of things like generative AI just create the ability for people to create that much more content. It's so like there's no barrier to creating a ton of content anymore. What that means is, I think finding the answer that's trustworthy and relevant is going to get even more challenging and even more puts more pressure in a way on the brand and on the brand's website and their property to get that right. So between really cool and delightful experiences and the challenge of a flood of new content, I think it's a super fascinating space to be riding alongside our customers and adapting to change that way.
Yeah, exactly. Good that you mentioned things like Perplexity. I'm using that every single day. It is actually for me, I'm not using Google anymore. So it has already moved for me, and I think it's going to do a lot for other people as well, whereby the traditional search where you would just put in a phrase now becomes a whole whatever. Yeah. You put your thoughts in there, and then it starts working for you. And yeah, fascinating to see where this is going. Okay, so we understand now what Cluedo is all about and how it can help customers. You become the CEO in 2023. Obviously, it is to take the business to a particular new place. What has been an early decision that you already took, like in your first 90 days or so, that has appeared to be already fundamental for where the company is now?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things that were really going quite well at Cluedo. We already had a customer base of 650-ish customers worldwide. We had a revenue base that was evenly distributed amongst big customers, smaller customers, Europe, North America, a little bit of Asia. So we had good balance in a way in terms of how we were going to market. I think one of the things that we didn't have really nailed down was exactly where the best fit customers were. We have a type of solution that's very much horizontal. Like I could launch a a very basic website today and put Cluedo on it, and it wouldn't be that valuable. There's not that much content. If there's not that much there, probably not that valuable to search. But point being, it's a solution that can work for everybody. So one of the things that we saw and that we tried to delve into very, very early in my time was refining how we thought about our ideal customer profile and what the value proposition is for those particular people. Even within a category like higher education, clearly there's different sizes and shapes and missions for those sites. We work with a lot of government, so some government is extremely on the end of early adopters, and they want the AI, they want the AI experiences, and some are less so. Some are know that their residents aren't gonna, that's not gonna be appealing to them, so they want something a little bit more simple, a little bit more straightforward. And so knowing even within the verticals and the regions we're in, knowing the differences amongst the customers in those pockets, big and small and mission-driven versus more transactional, like all the different pockets of our customers, is really important to hone in on. And then we could start to reshape how the products serve them and understand some of the value proposition in a deeper way. So understanding ICP was day one for me, which meant talking to a bunch of customers and refining how the company kind of putting in a new kind of like lens to our customer base that I think helped us have better conversations about customers internally too.
Exactly. So what did you find? What were sort of aha moments about the ones that are perfect fit versus the ones that are, but you can help, but are never going to be a fan?
Yeah, it's still a question that we ask ourselves all the time. I think one of the early learnings was some of the affinity that is already in place. Like we could take a long view and try and build our own communities, but I think in B2B today, across the board, there's already peer groups, affinity groups, behind the scenes conversations happening that we can never be a true member of a higher education technology group, as an example. People that work at universities, we're not going to truly be a member of that because we're not a university, but we can certainly support them, and we can, you know, have an understanding of how those work and show up at the right events and show up in the right places and tell the right story there. So that's part of it, is just like having an understanding of the buying cycle, I think is important for us to continue to delve into. I think in terms of what we learned about where the real value is, one of the things that was an insight for me is there is an aspect of what I would call kind of commercial teaching coming out of the challenger sale mindset from years ago now still applies for us. And it is the fact that a lot of times in our category, people don't recognize that there's that much volume going to site search on their site, that the search engine results page on their own website is typically the number two most traffic page, period. The ability for people to kind of understand the extent of that is actually quite important. And then we can start to draw out some of the conclusions of this is the impact that it's going to have on whatever the mission of your site is. So there's like it's a hidden problem for a lot of people because there isn't a feedback loop. If you go to a website and you don't find something on the site search, you're probably not going to call and say, hello, Mr. Website Owner or Ms. Website Owner, I'm having a problem with your site search. You're just going to assume it doesn't exist, or you're going to go find it some other way, or you're going to work around it rather than be in the person running the website, the marketer that has all these goals isn't going to be able to see that that's a problem. So we have to, in the right way, point it out for people. That's been a big value driver, is just the awareness around how big an impact this can have.
Let me make a small interruption here. Nick just made an excellent remark about what sparked traction within the company. He understands that the real value is not in explaining the power of search, but to articulate the hidden problem many customers have. Hard-gained visitors simply leaving rather than complaining about poor search experiences. This approach effectively opens the eyes of your prospect and instantly puts your solution high on their priority list. It's a trait remarkable SaaS companies master. They leverage the power of curiosity, then they sell the idea, not the product, and then they surprise and hit the right nerve. And you can master these traits as well. The first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because no one, well, at the moment, for example, if you take it to a commercial situation, we spend so much time and effort for people to find us and then at some point connect to us so that we get a conversation. And everything, everyone that is not doing that but has sort of been there but bounced or decided not to, I mean, no one is going to give you a bonus for that.
So, right. Yeah, I think a compelling way that a lot of our customers think about it is it's another channel, right? So you have email that is directed to put an offer in front of people and get people back to the site, back to the website, convert on whatever conversion you want them to. Things like SEO, paid search, social, all of those things are kind of channels in a way. When you've already got someone on the site, you've invested a ton of money to get someone on the website. And to have them not find what they're looking for when they're literally, they have high intent, they're literally typing in something in the search bar that they want to find. If that doesn't work, there's just it's a crucial point of failure that really it is quite costly in terms of the investment to get them to that point. I think it's a fascinating piece of the conversion funnel for people and one that is, which we are doing our best to fill in some of the gaps in terms of understanding with it.
Yeah. That brings me to another point. You know, you said on your website, you say connect users to valuable content. And I read somewhere else that it's also, of course, is going to give extremely actionable insights for marketing, for sales, for development. How big of a portion of the value prop is that for a company?
Yeah, it can be quite a lot. Somewhat recently, I was talking to one of our customers in Denmark, and they effectively have a flow where they have an editorial meeting every week. And it's a group of people that are deciding what content needs to be created, what content needs to be updated, and so forth on their website. And during that weekly meeting, they have a dashboard that they get from Cluedo that says, what are people searching for that they're not finding? Yeah. That's a cue that that's some content that we should have. Like that, there's a need there, and so it is. We've started to kind of help people frame the Cluedo analytics is the equivalent of SEMrush or something like that, where it is like it's not SEO from Google, it's internal search optimization. Where it is, what are the keywords that are trending? What's popping up? Where are people not finding? Where's the gap in effectiveness in terms of like if someone searches for something and they don't click through, there might be something there to fix. So we provide those kind of recommendations because a lot of the teams we work with are not, they have extremely limited time and resources. They're managing large sites and sometimes they're small teams. So we've done what I think is most helpful is just point our users at directly what's the most urgent thing and give them the ability to fix it. If a link is broken or something's not connected, give them a one-click way to fix it. Like, still let them curate the experience, but have them very easily make those changes. And then the fueling new content and fueling updates to content can be a really, really valuable piece of what we do too, because it is, again, it's clear signals from high-intent website visitors. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you pay fortunes for getting that information about intent from other vendors. Right. Now you got it on your own website. So respond to it. Exactly. So you said you've been refining your ICP. What has been a tough decision in relation to that where you said, okay, from now on, we're not going to focus there anymore? Because I mean, I can understand it, the arguing internally.
Yeah. Our space is very heavily marketed by people and providers that are focused on transactions and e-commerce sites. And historically, we've been more focused on the heavy content sites. We have some e-commerce customers, and we're able to meet their needs quite well. So it's not as if we don't have a solution there, but we haven't gone to be Cluedo is for e-commerce. We haven't gone there directly and like really honed in on only that. So we've kept our solution fairly broad. And the reason for that is because we see a lot of need. We see a lot of demand. Like there is where we got our roots. The very first site that had Cluedo on it was a higher education site. So that's kind of where our roots are. And there are still many, many out there that we think are viable potential fits. So that's a choice that we've made over time is to not over-index on the more transactional side of things. because it's kind of the non-transactional or the heavy content and media-driven sites are, I think, underrepresented when it comes to technology
Exactly.
solutions for them. So that's an example of like we haven't, it's not as if we've pivoted away, but we haven't doubled down on some of the more transactional sites. So
No, it's the underserved. I mean, I can completely understand the relevance for transactional side where you're looking for a product with a specific spec, but it's going to be a very clouded space. And specifically on the other side, where you have a lot of content, like a university, the example there, or a local authority that is providing all kind of information that they want people to consume and find. Yeah, completely different technique, and that's where you can find your edge. Fun. Well, talking about the edge then, defensible differentiation or differentiation in its own right, but you say there's a Google, and of course, but Google doesn't work for your own site, and there's Perplexity. With the whole notion now of generative AI and everything that's possible these days, with creating local large language models, how do you ensure that your differentiation remains strong?
I think what we're seeing is a continuum of people running websites and wanting a solution like ours, going from wanting complete control and a very, very like manual process to one that's less manual and nearly fully automated. And what I mean by that is we have customers that are going in and adjusting the page rank in the search results that they have. So they're like pretending they're Google on their own website again by saying, I actually want this result to be higher than another one for this search
Sponsored.
result. Yeah. So I can kind of boost it up. I can do banner ads within my search engine results. If I have like an example is like a Black Friday free shipping discount code, you can put that banner ad in the search results and have people understand it and click through on that. So there's that piece where people want that control. Then on the other end of the spectrum, there are certainly people that would rather have AI just take care of it. Like load this on my site and have the results are relevant. AI is going to continue to re improve that via machine learning and via algorithms and via AI like learning and RAG and so forth. So we have done both as a company. We have kind of the ability for our users to put their thumb on the scale and manage that manually. As well as very, very early on, 9+ years ago, we applied machine learning within our result set. So it would learn over time and get better and better without human intervention. So I think we're in that continuum. I think wasn't that long ago, we were much more on the manual side, and our customers and users want more automation now, which is part of why we've adjusted our roadmap accordingly. So that's part of what we see. And I think there are solutions that are out there on both ends of that spectrum still that are in the competitive set for us. There is the black box, uncontrollable AI that's gonna, potentially like do things that you wouldn't do if you were in control of it as a human being. And then on the other end, there's the extreme, like I'm gonna build this out and I'm gonna need a team of 5 people to configure it, and it's gonna be a science project for a long, long time. We like to think of ourselves as implementation is fairly straightforward. The control never leaves, but you can automate it to a certain degree as far as you want to with AI and these AI experiences. So,
Yeah, I mean, at the end, it's going deep and really understanding what's truly going on with your customers, and that's where you have an edge of being in this space already for a longer time. Because, yeah, I mean, there's all the innovation is happening fast, but at the end, the moat that you're building is something that, of course, where multiple things play in one go.
Yeah, and we have the ability to, just that's another kind of thing that your comment made me think of. Having worked in CRM and ERP industries before, we have the ability to just say, go look at this customer site. This is how it works. Like we have the ability to just have those showcase customers that people can go experience firsthand is actually a big differentiator. And we have many, many, many of them around the world, different languages, different experiences. And some of our customers have worked with us to make things extremely custom and extremely like magical in terms of how they work and how they curate content. So a wide spectrum of customer types that we can actually just showcase in live environments. Like
Yeah.
don't have to do demos. It's already on, it's online. Go try it. Go
Exactly.
nuts. So that's, it's an advantage compared to some other kind of SaaS categories where it's more of a, we have to build you something and then we'll show you. And yeah, so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I couldn't believe that we would just bring up a site of one of our local authorities and show them, how their P&L would look like today. No, it's yeah, that's the beauty of it. It is just live. It's there for everybody, and it's there to shine, also for their customers. So that's these are beautiful use cases. Since you have been in marketing for so long now, if you had to rebuild a company from scratch today, what's one thing which you would do differently in terms of positioning it?
One thing that I've learned over time that I would emphasize and probably do differently, it is a unique experience to walk into such a varied customer set. And if I was going to start Cluedo from day one, I would pick a very, very skinny niche and very, very like concrete value proposition for a small sector of who we have as customers today. I'm certainly not complaining that we have those hundreds of customers with showcase sites that we can point people to. That's an advantage that we have to use. But if I were going to start from the beginning, I wouldn't say, okay, well, let's have 27 different industry categories as our customers in our CRM system, and we can see them all and they're all out there. We would pick one and build a product that was amazing for them, and then pick another and then broaden out from there, kind of the crossing the chasm approach of kind of having a very specific type of customer that you're providing a very specific amount of value for, and build on that rather than trying to go too broad. I think that's an easy mistake. Your eyes get pretty big, especially in a solution set like ours, where it is, there's some amount of it that's universal and universally applicable. You still have to niche down and find your way that way.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, horizontal solutions, of course, it's the easy trap. And just because you can help everybody doesn't mean you have to. Again, there are industries where, and even if you look, for example, at the university space, I mean, I know that space quite well as well because we had a lot of customers there from an ERP perspective. They might look the same on the outside, but they're radically different on the inside. Different things are critical, different things are more valuable to them. They have, like I say, a different mission with the company, with the website. All of these things play a role in terms of how important the problem is you're solving for them. Completely get that. Nice that you say that. But sometimes you just kind of, you come into a warm bath and then you have to swim in it as it is today. Let me see. You already said you have well, 650 customers when you started. In the meantime, of course, it has grown. It's in across regions, North America, Europe, Asia Pacific. Having your, well, the experience that you have with the various companies you work for, but particularly this one with Cluedo, what's a counterintuitive lesson that you've learned about scaling the business?
Counterintuitive lesson about scaling.
Yeah.
I mean, it maybe not that counterintuitive, but the idea that going market to market, the channels may look totally different. And part of what's counterintuitive about that from a marketing perspective is there's destined to be, if you truly understand the value proposition and the customers themselves and how they buy, understanding that will tell you as a marketer that there's probably a very small set of channels that'll be your winners. And wasting your time with channels that don't work, even if some other category can make them work, even if there's thought leaders that think it's going to work or that have good stories to tell that sound very similar to you, you have to find your way into what actually works for your business in your value proposition and your audience. And double down on that, and don't be afraid to ignore the ones that are kind of like the common playbook for others. I think it can be very challenging because marketers are typically curious, typically want to are somewhat ego driven, but also somewhat just like visual and design oriented. And some of the other channels may be more catered to like I can do a cool video. But if my audience isn't going to consume a video, no matter how cool it is, and it's not going to actually drive a belief and a trust and an understanding and eventually a conversion, and video is probably not your thing, and you shouldn't you shouldn't try and force it into your audience. So for me, like the guidance I give to marketers all the time is, you have to get as close as you can to revenue, first of all. Understand how people actually buy. Understand, sit alongside the sales team as they have some of those conversations, and then make sure that you're spending the majority of your time focused on the right things in that way. It's way too distracting out there in marketing, and the channels keep exploding. There's more and more to do. So picking the right things to do and doing them really, really well and doubling down is, I think, more important than ever.
Yeah, exactly. Do you have an example from Cluedo where you said, "Hey, what are we doing here? Let's stop and double down there."
I think events actually, and part of it is people coming out of their shell after the pandemic a little bit, but events, either events that are industry events that we participate in, like a trade show booth setting, or we're on stage talking about something, or hosting customers in our space at our own offices and doing kind of more community events. I think the mix of those has actually been quite effective for us. It's a way for us to have kind of some of what we talked about before, those eye-opening conversations around, everybody knows what a search bar looks like. Most of our customers or prospects have a search bar already on their site, but they don't know the impact of it not being great, and they don't know what's going on once somebody hits that little magnifying glass after they search. They don't have visibility to it. So having kind of those in-person warmer conversations that are, it's not a like super pointed pointing out how bad they are. It's more just exploring around how they think about their website and their experience. We've done some similar things on the outbound side too. We have been able to use some of that commercial teaching in outbound as well. So, but I would point to events as actually a way for us to add a lot of value to the communities that we're in, and also get a very, very good understanding of where the priority sets are, and have a better understanding, which will lead to better outcomes for us.
Glad to say that because I recently had Mark Kosaklow on my website, on my podcast, who came from Outreach, who sort of admitted, okay, we have ruined the whole world of outbound. Let's do something about it. The great ignore. And I mean, this is the way to stand out again, you know? Yes, it's not scalable, but you know, you're a sales-led SaaS company. You don't need thousands of customers to buy online from you. You know, you need the right ones to buy from you, and it's all about relationship building, and this is the way to do it and to build trust. So it's I completely
Yeah.
see that. Glad it's
I mean,
actually
for
coming back.
yeah, and for us, it's a real like realization that, I know Gartner not that long ago put out a little chart that was like, here's the B2B buying process. And it looked like the most complex map of, okay, now they go to this affinity group over here. Now they're going to G2 to read a review. Now they're going back to their CIO to talk about whether it's a fit or not. Now they're going to go talk to their like Discord or Slack channel to have a conversation with that peer group. Now they're going to go back to their team. Now they have to, like, it was, the buying process is not linear at all and is getting less so. And you have to, I think you have to be thoughtful about things like attribution are important. Understanding where your budget is going is important and always will be. But having, giving yourself the latitude to organize the entire organization around outcomes and then doing the inputs that are going to drive those outcomes. So.
Well said. Well said. Two questions in relation to that, and then I got my last question. So, what is a metric that you've stopped tracking that you thought was crucial initially?
I like that question a lot. I think it is like measuring by outputs, meaning, of course, we want to measure, but like it's very easy to build a plan for marketing and work with marketing to build a plan around, like, okay, here's our lead goal. Let's go get leads. Let's do that lead thing and we'll get leads and then they'll qualify and then they'll win and we'll have this nice little funnel built out. I think I would much rather focus on, so not drop those entirely, but not make those the focal point. You have to go a step ahead or a step above and say, what are the inputs that are going to drive the outcomes that we want? And it could be going to events where we're going to collect 45 leads, but we're going to have 150 conversations and we're going to be in the right place when they're ready to buy and they're going to have a good brand experience. And those things create some measurables, web traffic or some other awareness metric that we can gauge, and then that will filter down into the conversions that we want eventually and when the time is right for that. So overly fixating on outcomes, I think, creates this like unproductive tension of, Ooh, we didn't get our lead number this week. Next week, though, let's get our lead number and not this clarify like, oh, in the next week or in the next month, we're going to do this set of things. And we have a reasonable amount of confidence that the leads will come as a result of this rat's nest of decision making that happens at every one of our prospects. So focusing more so on the inputs and keeping an eye on the outputs, but controlling what you can control and making sure that that's measured in a thoughtful and evaluated in a thoughtful way.
I literally wrote my daily reflection on that today because I saw the Q3 Pavilion. What is it? The pulse of Q3, and it said 60% of SaaS companies have missed targets. And if you look at the numbers by category, it is actually for the smaller ones it was 40%, but then for the bigger ones it was way beyond 70. And it was very interesting to understand and to see what the people. We're talking about that achieved over target and the ones that didn't achieve. And it's like you say, it's control what you can control rather than having excuses about all the things that are going wrong out of your control because it's out of your control, you know? It's so well said. I like that. Let me see. Two more questions. How has your definition of success changed since you started?
Don't know that it's changed that much, honestly. I think if I frame it up as where customers find value and how we demonstrate our value, I think there is actually a principle that I've changed my thinking on quite a bit. So the concept is, say every one of our buyers has a list of 10 priorities, right? So I'm a higher education institution. My biggest priority is getting applications, which lead to enrollment, which helps my university thrive and survive and so forth. And then go down the list. Number two is this. Number three is this. Usually for us, something like site search as a thing is number seven or eight. It's always on the list, but it's never number one. And as a result, it's easy to not take action on, right? So it's easy to ignore. Part of our reframing and our thinking is, what is the top priority? In knowing that such a high percentage of people are going to use search and have high intent when they do it, odds are site search actually aligns quite well with that number one priority. So telling that story around, not just saying your site search doesn't work, you should fix it. We should tell a story around your enrollment numbers are lagging, you should fix that. And here's a way that we help our customers fix that directly. So aligning ourselves with priority number one instead of bumping up priority number eight up the list, which is going to take a lot of effort and may never happen. Like it just may never rise. Like fixing that in isolation may never be priority enough to take action on, which is not good for us. So we want to help people understand the value and how it aligns with. There's very few priorities that we don't align with it to some degree. So it's about telling the story around that and helping people understand it. So.
Perfect. Glad you said that. For a number of reasons, and it's indeed about do you solve a highly valuable and highly critical problem? And whether that's direct or indirect, but at least you have a story around it, and that's what's keeping people up at night. So it's as simple as that. Last question then, from your whole journey as a in your career, and now the last 2 years being the CEO of Cluedo, what would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with other tech entrepreneurs?
A do would be put yourself out of your comfort zone. And an example of that for me was fairly early on. I'm a relatively introverted person. I can do podcasts and I'm okay at it, I think, hopefully. But I am fairly introverted, always have been. But I forced myself fairly early on to put myself in the position to build a muscle around extroversion and put myself in positions to build that as a strength, just knowing that the better I could meet people, have conversations, build my network, the better off I was going to be in the world of business, right? There's real advantages to having a strong network. So I needed to build that. So as an example, I joined a marketing association nonprofit board when I was very early in my career. I felt like I was extremely fortunate to have the right opportunity to do that. And it put me out there. It was like, I don't have a choice than go to these board meetings, meet these people that are seven rungs up the ladder higher than I am, but contribute, do the work, do the things that they don't have time to do, contribute in that way, and put myself out there. that's a do, like comfort zone. For me, that was it. Some people are natural extroverts and they don't need that example, but it'll be something else. But don't like, I know a lot of people would say build on your strengths, but I think you have to build on what you need strength in. And what that was an example for me is like, I need to be stronger at being in a room, working the room a little bit, and that will help me very clearly. So work on that as a strength. Work, get stronger there. I'll never be the most extroverted person in the world, but I can be better there, and I can make the time spent in social setting better. So that's an example. I think don't do, I don't know, my wife tells me all the time to chill out, like don't stress over some of the stuff that is maybe not worth stressing about, but it's true. And one of the reflections that I have quite frequently is you write down your top three problems any day, and then you go back a month later, you won't even remember what those were. You will have written down something that was so ephemeral, so in the moment, and so over shortly thereafter that probably not worth worrying about in advance and after. Just worry about it in the time that you're solving the problem and fix it. So worry a little bit less, focus energy not on worrying, but more so like problem solving.
Nice, nice words to end this podcast. Where can people go to find out more about Cluedo or to say hi to you?
Yeah, Cluedo.com, Cluedo.com is where you'll find all of our materials, some demo materials, as well as stuff in multiple languages. So we do serve a lot of Europe and North America and Asia and so forth. So support a global, I know you have a global audience, so you can find anything that you need to know about Cluedo globally right there. And then I'm pretty easy to find on LinkedIn. That's probably the social business platform I'm most active on, like most of us are. So happy to connect with anybody that wants to talk marketing technology, that wants to talk Cluedo, of course, and as well as entrepreneurship and leadership too. Those are some of the topics that I reflect on quite a bit.
Perfect. Thank you very much for sharing the wisdom. And yeah, good luck on the next couple of years on the journey again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me on. This is really fun conversation.
And this ends my conversation with Nick. And I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Nick Wassenberg, CEO of Cluedo. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect Tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.